Time to see the devil, old Scratch, and start paying back the loan that Prophet had received for extra party time up here on the green side of the sod, in return for Prophet's shoveling coal down below for all the rest of eternity. He'd hoped he'd be able to stay up here longer, enjoy the green side of the sod for a few more years, but, oh well, all good things must come to an end. Thinking back on it, they really hadn't been as good or as much fun as he'd hoped anyway. Old Scratch had really taken him for a ride on that one. That would teach Prophet to sell his soul to the devil. Truth be told, though, he was ready. Oh, Christ on a merry-go-round, he was truly ready. Just toss him a shovel and show him the coal pile. And for the love of God and all that's holy, tell the bastard with the axe handle to light and sit a spell. He mercifully lost all sensation for a while, as though his brain had been shut off. Vaguely, he became aware of being able to separate his hands and his feet and to move freely. And then he groaned luxuriously at a cool, not cold, but cool, soft, soothing feeling as though mud were being rubbed into his back, relieving some of the tenderness from the irons that had been pressed there. The hombre with the stick was still in business, but he seemed to be taking a smoke break now and then. When he was back at it, smashing that stick against Prophet's head and shoulders, he seemed to ease up slightly. Maybe he was getting tired or a little bored. Whatever the case, the pain in Prophet's throbbing brain was easing. Later, or what must have been later, in this timeless, dark world he found himself in, he was aware of soft hands on him, making him feel wonderfully, soothingly cool, gently massaging that mud into his back again. Then he was aware of being alone for a time. He'd awaken now and then and look around the stone room, which he gradually realized was a cave with his gear spread around. He was resting against his saddle, and he was naked beneath his blankets. Sometimes he was alone, and sometimes he wasn't. He smelled something foreign, which set his nerves on edge. It was the rancid odor of long, unwashed men and leather.
Oye, mira esto.
When he opened his eyes, he saw two Mexicans kicking through his gear. One turned to him.
Huh?
He lifted a big pistol with a deer horn handle.
You wake up only to die, eh, amigo?
The Mex with the cocked pistol jerked his head toward the dark night gaping on Prophet's left. The other man, who'd been crouched over the fire to add another log, straightened and turned his head in the same direction. Prophet had been wrong about him. He wasn't a Mexican, but an Anglo dressed in the bright colors and leather of the Mexican border bandito. He slid his Schofield from its holster, angled across his belly, and clicked the hammer back. Hooves clomped as the horses shifted around nervously.
Someone's out there. See?
The Mexican turned his molasses dark eyes on Prophet.
Who's out there?
Prophet wondered if he was dreaming. As in a dream, he tried to speak, but he had no voice. The Mexican gasped and staggered backward, triggering his pistol into the floor of the cave about a foot left of Prophet.
What the?
The Anglo flew back into the cave's shadows and lay still. The Mexican lay groaning and shifting his feet, raking his spurs against the cave's floor. As if out of a dream, a figure materialized. Slender and curvy, long blonde hair tumbling over shoulders clad in a striped brown serape. As the stranger stepped closer to the cave entrance, Prophet blinked, trying to clear his vision. He looked down at brown boots trimmed with silver spurs and followed the slender, denim-clad legs up to a cartridge belt and two cross-draw holsters strapped to slim hips over the serape. A kid-gloved hand still held a smoking, silver-chased, pearl-gripped .45, gray smoke curling from the barrel. Prophet looked up past the gun to the long, slender neck that was tanned to the color of fresh-whipped buttery cream. He took in the sharp chin, the long, fine nose, and a pair of oblique hazel eyes set atop tapering cheeks. and peering out from beneath the brim of a man's tan Stetson.
Fancy meeting you here, Louisa.
The blonde twirled the pistol on her finger and held it low by her denim-clad right thigh.
Friends of yours, Lou?
Prophet looked at the two men lying on the far side of the fire in pools of their own blood. Gun smoke still wafted in the air around him, mingling with that of the snapping fire.
Mere acquaintances. We were just starting to get friendly when you came along.
The young woman stepped into the cave, raking her flinty hazel eyes from one bandit to the other.
Sorry to intrude.
Oh, well.
The Mexican was still alive, blinking up at the ceiling in shock, his chest rising and falling sharply. Prophet had risen onto his elbows, pain raking him from head to toe. He was too confused and in too much pain to try to wrap his mind around any of what had just happened.
Didn't introduce themselves. Oh, but I reckon they was bandidos.
Bandidos.
Louisa Bonaventure, the blonde bounty hunter and a prophet's sometime partner, had become notorious in her own right for hunting down and killing the men who'd murdered her family on their small Nebraska farm, and then gone on to hunt other child and women killing men of their ilk across the western frontier. Somewhere along her bloody trail, some pulp writer had tagged Louisa with the handle of Vengeance Queen. Louisa walked over and gave the Mexican's boot a kick.
You a bandido, amigo?
She stared down at him, aiming her pistol at his head. He didn't say anything, just stared up at her, breathing hard.
Best say a prayer, if you've a mind.
Prophet winced as she drilled a bullet through the Mexican's head.
There you go. That's what you get for trying to kill my old pal Lou.
Lowering the smoking pistol, she turned to Prophet, her eyes oddly uncertain.
We are still pals, aren't we, Lou?
He rested his head back against his saddle.
Why wouldn't we be?
I'm bad medicine.
Oh, hush.
Yes, I am.
She swallowed and lowered her gaze to the dead bandidos.
I'm evil. Deep inside me, there's a bad rot. And it came out in Mexico.
Shut the hell up, girl.
You've known all along, haven't you?
She turned her eyes to meet his, dark and glinting in the firelight.
Louisa, you ain't bad medicine. Confused, yeah, after what you've been through. Hell.
Louisa stepped over Prophet's legs as she walked back to the cave door and pressed her back to the side of it, hard to Prophet's left. She stood staring out, her pistol in her right fist. She stood silently for a long time, staring into the darkness and listening for possible friends of the men she'd killed. Finally, apparently deciding there'd only been two intruders, she holstered her pistol and stole out away from the cave, disappearing into the darkness. When she returned, she was a little breathless.
Nothing but two good horses out there, each stocked with a carbine.
She went over and picked up a mesquite log from the small stack beside the fire and added it to the flames.
They laid a nice fire, anyway. We're all good for something, I reckon. Hey, Lou.
She swung around to Prophet, her figure silhouetted against the fire.
How you feeling?
Oh, like I had a Dutch ride over sharp rocks. Oh.
You look like you did.
Prophet scowled at her, wincing against the hammering in his head that wasn't so much like an axe handle anymore, but just your average pine branch. He still wished the demon wielding it would go away, though. Prophet sniffed, raked a thumb across his naked thigh, and lifted it to his eyes.
What is this? Grease?
Arnica. Got a fresh tin from the dry goods store in Moon's Well. Put it on all your cuts and bruises, which means it about covers every inch of you.
Prophet glanced at the night beyond Louisa. An escarpment rose about 6 feet beyond the cave, but to the left of it he could see a few stars twinkling between dark, jagged-edged peaks. All he knew was that he wasn't in Chizos Springs, and he wasn't out on the plain either.
Where the hell are we?
My camp in the Chizos Range. I've been keeping an eye on the town.
Was looking it over this morning when I saw some big, dumb-looking hombre getting his proverbial hat handed to him out by Mr. Moon's well. What'd you do to make those men so angry, Lou? Cheat at cards or diddle the wrong whore?
Louisa leaned against the side of the cave, arms crossed.
Or maybe you're trying to cut in on my dance. You might have asked. Like a civilized bounty hunter.
Dance? I don't know what you're talking about. You got any whiskey?
With all the lumps on your head, how can you think a tangled leg?
I always think a tangled leg. Besides, painkiller.
She walked out to where Prophet could now see her brown and white pinto and mean and ugly hobbled about 20 feet down the slope from the cave. He saw her shadow move around her horse, hear straps whipping free, the squawk of leather, and saw her walk back up the incline toward the cave with her saddle on one shoulder, saddlebags on the other. She dropped the saddle on the other side of the fire from Prophet, then reached into a saddlebag pouch and pulled out a flat, corked, smoky blue bottle.
Go easy.
She tossed the bust head to him.
It's all I have.
Prophet scowled at the bottle, shook it.
Why, hell, there ain't more than a thimbleful in here. Now, what's the point of carrying any whiskey at all if you ain't gonna carry any more than this?
Don't look a gift horse under the tail, Lou. I carry it for medicinal purposes only.
Prophet popped the cork on the bottle and took a conservative sip.
How long I been here?
This your third night.
Christ, how'd you find me?
I caught up to you after they stripped you naked and tied you over your horse. They tossed your clothes out in the brush behind the pleasure parlor. They're not exactly clean, but they're behind you, if you ever feel like donning them again.
Oh, I'll don them again.
Louisa hauled her cooking gear from her war bag, not looking at him.
Where were you just now?
Moonswell.
Oh, don't call it that. It's Chiso Springs.
Whatever it's called, I've been keeping an eye on it.
She was slicing salt pork into a skillet. She set the pan on a rock amongst the dancing flames, added another mesquite branch to the fire, and sat back against her own saddle, regarding Prophet darkly.
Trouble there, Lou. This Mordecai Moon character has been hauling in kidnapped women from New Mexico and Arizona, most of them Apache orphans kidnapped off reservations, as sex slaves for his whorehouse.
Slaves?
That's what brought me here. I heard about such deviltry in Las Cruces and rode over to see what I could do.
Moon's riding point on this deviltry?
Yeah.
Wouldn't doubt it a bit. How many sex slaves does a midget need, anyhow?
Quite a few, apparently. He keeps each girl for only a couple months. When he figures his customers have tired of the same ones, he ships them down to Mexico and sells them to a corrupt rurale colonel, who in turn...
Compa?
Louisa looked over the crackling pan and the flickering flames at Prophet.
How did you know?
Lucky guess.
Who, in turn, as I was saying, sells them to brothels down in Chihuahua and northern Sonora. It's a big money-making proposition for them. Mexicans might not like the wild Apache men much, but they like their young girls just fine.
Prophet shook his head and lowered his arm over his eyes again, trying to push down the pain behind them.
Forget it, Louisa. It's too big. You're one girl. They're not bad with the pair of matched hog legs, I'll give you that. But I won't be any use for at least a week. And even if I was, we're talking Moon's men. He's got a big payroll. And the old outlaw sheriff, Lee Mortimer? Nuh-uh. Not a snowball's chance in hell. That's a job for Texas Rangers, U.S. Marshals, the cavalry. Hell,
there's one more thing, Lou, which might hasten your healing.
What's that?
Moon has made a slave of Mrs. Rose now, too.
What?
Prophet snapped his head up. Louisa nodded slowly, darkly.
I saw her tonight through a window. Her and Moon and that brown-haired girl of his.
The three of them?
Louisa nodded again, slowly, pursing her lips, her hazel eyes reflecting the umber firelight.
But only two seem to be having any fun.
Can I go now? I have to see my husband.
Moon was hopping around, pulling his pants up over his ball brigands.
Hell no, you can't go. I done told you you was a permanent fixture in these parts. When me and Griselda's done with you, we're turning you over to our paying customers. When they tire of you, you're going to Mexico with the Apache girls.
He winked as he straightened, then bent both knees, crouching a little to bring his pants up over his paunch, sucking in his gut and buttoning the child-sized denims.
I'm tired of her, Mordecai. She just lays there. Don't even pretend to be having any fun at all.
Moon reached down for his shirt and straightened once more.
Maybe she just needs a little more practice. She ain't never whored before, Griselda. Not like some others.
Griselda stopped buttoning her cream blouse to swat Moon's shoulder with the back of her hand.
I done told you, Mordecai. I ain't never whored a day in my life. I done told you that, and I don't like being called a whore.
Moon grinned in devilish delight as he dodged another swat.
Please, my husband has been alone for 2 days. He needs food and water. He needs his medication.
Keep quiet. Your caterwauling's growing right tiresome. And when I get tired of you, you know what that means.
He pointed an admonishing finger at her again. Before she could respond, the clatter of wagons and the thunder of many hooves rose in the street outside the hotel. The cacophony grew louder amidst the whistling and yells of bullwhackers and mule skinners.
That'd be Chaz Burdick's train from Amarillo. His crew always comes in thirsty and girl hungry. We're gonna make us a killing tonight, my dear Griselda.
Moon ambled toward the window and stopped in front of Ruth. He placed one of his big hands on her cheek, lifting her face to meet his wretched, leering gaze.
You shouldn't have piss-burned Griselda, Mrs. Rose. For that, I'm gonna turn you over to old Burdick. He's just rolling in money, and he's asked about you before.
He winked.
Before you was in my stable.
You son of a...
Oh, hush.
Moon removed his hand from her face, hopped up on a chair fronting the window, and looked out.
Oh, it's him all right. Burdick and his half-dozen skinners from the panhandle. They look even thirstier and even hornier than usual.
Leaping off the chair, he looked at Griselda as he stuffed his shirt tails into his pants.
What do you see, honey? Would you like that? Me turning her over to old Burdick and his boys? They'd pay a pretty penny for her, too. Virgins and married women. Nothing turns a man's wheel faster.
Griselda was strapping her derringers around her narrow waist. She looked at Ruth, still sitting on the edge of the bed, and curled her lip.
I'd like that just fine, Mordecai.
Griselda turned to go.
Kisses.
Griselda glanced at Ruth, then leaned down and pressed her lips to Moon's. Then she turned and walked out the door.
Oh, ain't she something, Mrs. Rose? Ain't she just something?
Ruth's heart felt as though it had been torn to ribbons in her chest.
Why are you doing this, Moon? What did Frank and I ever do to you?
Moon sat on a footstool to pull his little black boots on.
You didn't pay your taxes, Mrs. Rose. You know that. And you barely even been paying on your water contract.
You don't need our money. You make enough here to satisfy every need you could possibly have.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
He buckled his shell belt and twisted his rounded hips this way and that, adjusting the holstered Colt. He smiled so that his pasty, craggy cheeks dimpled and his little eyes narrowed to slits.
I do it, 'cause I can do it.
Moon scooped his hat off a chair, frowned at the hole in its crown, and then set it on his head. He walked toward Ruth and stopped about a foot away from her.
When you can do something, a man like me, you do it, no matter what it is. No matter how bad. Fuck good. To a man living in a body like mine, I level with crotches all my life, raised by folks who'd as soon spit on me as treat me even halfway decent, who kept me locked in a cellar when neighbors came because they were embarrassed, laughed and called me the devil in the hole or hell's little angel. There ain't much good in the world to begin with. See how it is? Well, I found out early that my body might be small, but my spirit was big, bad as it was, big and bad. And for one reason or another, small as I was body-wise, I could command men, get them to do just whatever I wanted. Don't ask me how, but I could do it then, and I can do it now. And by God, for a man like me, that's everything.
Moon rocked back on his heels and poked the first two fingers of each hand into the wool vest he wore under his black claw hammer coat. He considered Ruth for a time. She stared back at him through the screen of hair hanging in her eyes.
I could never win the heart of a woman like you.
He raked his eyes across her, his little chest rising and falling slowly.
No, I could never make a woman like you, pretty and upright and well-mannered and sophisticated in a country kind of way, feel anything but disgust for me. I've seen it all my life. But I can put the fear of God into you, can I?
He grinned broadly, showing his black, crooked teeth.
And I have, haven't I?
He winked, turned on a heel, and sauntered to the door. He stopped with one hand on the knob and looked back at her. He frowned as though troubled.
Tell me something from your woman's point of view, will you, Mrs. Rose? Do you think Griselda really loves me? Or is she just play-acting?
I think she had far more fun with me than she's ever had with you, Mr. Moon.
Genuine injury darkened Moon's eyes like a cloud sweeping the ground on a sunny day. He covered it with a sigh, smoothed the colorless whiskers dangling off his chin, and turned to the door.
Get yourself ready for Burdick. He'll be up shortly.
He gave her another menacing wink and went out. She heard the key turn in the lock on the opposite side of the door. 30 minutes later, there was a knock on the door. The door opened and a man's hatted head appeared between the door and the jamb. The man had a thick mustache with upswept ends and 3 or 4 days' worth of beard stubble on his sunburned cheeks. Ruth flushed. So did Chaz Burdick behind the bright pink on his broad, fleshy cheeks, above the mustache that had a fine coating of trail dust. Burdick doffed his broad-brimmed Stetson as he came into the room, looking sheepish but also randy, his eyes raking Ruth up and down. She'd cleaned herself at the wash basin and donned the dress Moon had given her. She looked down at the gun belt hanging down his right denim-clad hip. A walnut-gripped pistol jutted from the worn brown leather holster. Her heart thudded, and she quickly lifted her gaze to Burdick's flushed pink face.
Well, Chaz, fancy meeting you here.
He closed the door, holding his hat down low by his side. The din from downstairs was loud now. Burdick had the key in his other hand, and now he stuck the key in the lock and turned it until the bolt clicked and left it there. Burdick turned to her, still wearing that sheepish, eager look.
Ruth.
He dipped his chin politely.
Quite a place here, huh?
You don't really expect me to indulge in polite conversation, do you?
Burdick glanced at the hat in his hands.
Well, the Apache girls mostly just grunt and groan.
Ruth let her smile turn dark.
Is that who you prefer? The little Apache girls here against their will? Moon's sex slaves?
Burdick let his arms drop to his sides.
Now, Ruth, goddammit.
You know I'm here against my will, don't you, Chaz?
Burdick swallowed, glanced at her breasts half revealed by the low-cut dress, and then lowered his gaze to the floor.
Figured.
You still want to do this?
Now he looked up, angry, and she could see that his dark eyes were glassy from drink.
I paid the little man, for Christ's sakes, Ruth. Hell, I got needs. You know how far I come today?
You were friends with Frank, Chaz.
Yeah, I know.
And you're married, aren't you?
Burdick's face turned pink. He curled his thick upper lip and angrily tossed his hat on the brocade upholstered chair to his right.
Enough talking, Ruth. Well, I'm sorry about Frank, but you're working over here now, and by God, I paid 2 silver cartwheels to that little fucker for only an hour with you. Now, you get out of that dress before I get mad.
Ruth trembled.
All right.
She unbuttoned the dress. They watched in eagerness and awe as she slid each strap down off a shoulder, slowly lowered the top of the dress to her waist. She wore nothing beneath it. She let the dress drop to the floor and stood before him, naked.
Is this what you've been wanting to see, Chaz? Am I what you'd imagined I would be?
Holy shit.
with a near-manic grin, keeping his eyes on her naked body. Burdick kicked out of each boot so quickly that he nearly lost his balance and fell. She crawled into bed and stared at him coolly while he removed his gun and shell belt, looped the belt over a rear bedpost, and then shucked out of his shirt and trousers and then his socks and ball brigands. He fairly ran over to the bed, manhood at half-mast, and crawled under the covers, instantly pressing his sweaty, filthy, hairy body to hers, smashing his lips down on her mouth. He tasted like tobacco and tequila.
What? Huh? Hold on.
You hold on to this.
I'd like to be on top.
She smiled up at him.
Oh, you would, huh? Well, all right.
He grinned and rolled off of her. She rose to her knees and straddled him. He smiled up at her.
All right, then. Here we go.
Close your eyes.
He frowned while she hovered above him.
Why?
I'm shy. I reckon this is a little strange.
Okay.
He squeezed his eyes closed.
Well, come on. Hurry up, damn it.
Ruth grabbed a pillow, reached back, and jerked his revolver from the holster hanging from the bedpost. She pressed the pillow over Burdick's head and leaned forward, bringing all her weight to bear on the pillow, and pressed the revolver's barrel hard against it. Against the pillow and beneath the raucousness rising from below, the report sounded little louder than the popping of a dry knot in a wood stove. Ruth's heart fluttered. She wrinkled her nose against the stench of gunpowder and charred goose down. A small, round spot of blood shone in the pillow. It grew quickly, soaking the pillow and the cotton case. Ruth recoiled from the blood, drawing the pistol back away from the pillow. Beneath her thighs, she could feel the convulsions in the dying body. She climbed off Burdick so quickly that she got a foot tangled in the bed covers and fell off the side of the bed.
Damn!
She pricked her ears to listen. The music and carousing continued downstairs as usual. She heard no doors opening and closing around the room she was in, no footsteps in the hall. Quickly, she rose, wincing at a slight bruise on her left hip, and picked up Burdick's revolver. She set it on the dresser, picked up the red dress, and drew it on over her head. She looked around for a pair of shoes, but there were none in this part of the two-room suite that Moon and Griselda called their own.
Going barefoot might be better anyway. Quieter.
She had to get back over to her own place and see about Frank. The poor man must be starving, his bedclothes soaked with urine. If he was still alive. The thought of him dying so tragically from neglect swelled her heart until she felt it rise in her throat. Ruth glanced once more at Burdick. She could see his pasty belly, both arms, and one bare leg. The bloody pillow covered his face. His hands rested to either side of it, palms up, fingers curled like claws. He was the first man she'd ever killed. Strange how she felt absolutely no remorse whatsoever, only revulsion. It was what she'd had to do to save herself and Frank. What she would do once she'd returned to the Rose Hotel and Saloon, aside from tending Frank, she had no idea. Moon would find her in such an obvious place, of course. But what else could she do? She picked up the pistol and walked to the door. She twisted the key and winced when she heard the bolt click. She drew the door open and looked into the hall. It was dark as dusk, no candles lit, and vacant. The only light was that issuing up from the saloon. Ruth didn't know her way around the sprawling building, but she knew that the stairs ran along the outside of the rear wall. Quickly but quietly, walking on the balls of her bare feet, she made her way toward the broad wooden stairs that led down to the main drinking hall. Tiptoeing past the top of the stairs, brushing a shoulder along the wall, she glanced down the steps quickly to see tobacco smoke, aglow with lantern light, boiling up toward her. Men and brightly dressed whores were vague, jostling figures inside the billowing smoke plume. Ruth finally found a downward slanting corridor bisecting what appeared several unfinished rooms to the far back wall. Here, after some frantic searching, she found an outside door and dropped quickly down the two tiers of steps to the ground. At the bottom, she stopped and crouched to the left of the stairs. Straight out away from the building were two barns and a maze of corrals in which the hulking shapes of horses and mules milled. To Ruth's right, she could see the silhouettes of three men as well as the small, red-glowing coals of their cigarettes or cigars. Keeping to the building's dense shadow, Ruth sidestepped off to her left and then looked around the corner of the building toward the main street and the well. She could see her own hotel down the street. It was forbiddingly dark. Then she took off running straight west of the hotel, paralleling the main street but crouching behind brush, rocks, and cacti. She winced as her bare feet came down on cactus thorns and sharp rocks, but she kept running. She had to get to Frank. Finally, she'd traced a semicircle around the main part of the town and approached the Rose Hotel and Saloon from the rear. She entered via the back door.
Frank?
She moved through a storage room and entered the lobby. In the darkness, she saw the front desk. The stairs angled down from the second story on her left. As she made for the bottom of the staircase, something brushed the top of her head. Instinctively, she cowered from the cold touch, stepped to one side, and turned. She looked up to see something long and pale hanging suspended in the air beneath the second story balcony. Nearly level with her eyes, two bare feet turned slowly in midair about 5.5 feet above the floor. Frowning, vaguely feeling her lower jaw dropping, she stared up past the bare feet to two flowery white skinny legs ridged with fine light blue veins. Then she saw the rest of the hanging body and stumbled back against the wall. She met the heavy-lidded, death-glazed eyes of her husband and saw the rope coiled around his neck, the tongue protruding from between Frank's thin lips. An arm wrapped around her from behind, a hand clamped back hard across her mouth.
I am friend, not foe. I'll remove my hand if you promise not to scream.
Ruth slid her eyes to the left. A pretty female face stared at her from beneath the brim of a tan Stetson. Blonde hair hung down both sides of the girl's heart-shaped face to spill across her shoulders. Ruth frowned, incredulous, and nodded. The girl took her hand away.
Who are you?
Not the person who did that. I can promise you that.
Oh, Frank!
Ruth's knees buckled and she fell to the floor. She sobbed as she stared up in horror and heartbreak, pulling at the skirt lying snug across her thighs. She cried softly for a time and then crossed her arms on her breasts, lowered her chin, squeezed her eyes closed, and shook her head.
How could he?
Rather easily, I would think, from what I've learned of Mr. Moon so far.
The girl's voice was soft and oddly emotionless.
I'm a friend of Luke Prophet's.
Ruth looked up at her through tear-soaked eyes, curiosity only slightly tempering her grief.
Lou, he's...
The old boy is still kicking. No thanks to his own damn foolishness. He keeps pulling stunts like that. I expect he'll be giving up his devilish old ghost soon.
Who are you?
I'm Louisa.
You're a friend of Lou's?
That's right. Trail pards, he'd say.
Even through her grief and terror, Ruth knew an instant's pang of jealousy.
I got him tucked away in a cave up in the Chisos Mountains. It'll take him a couple days to get back on his feet. Came down here to see what Mr. Moon was up to. Figured I could do that from your place. I just found this man, who I assume is your husband, a few minutes before you came. I'm sorry, Mrs. Rose.
Ruth looked up at Frank once more. His feet looked so vulnerable and exposed. So pale, with light blue veins showing through the papery skin.
He was utterly defenseless.
Ruth tightened her jaws with a raw fury that burned up from deep inside her. She rose slowly and stared up at Frank, but what she saw in her mind's eye was the grinning face of Mordecai Moon.
I'll get him down.
Louisa swung around and began climbing the stairs, sliding a knife out of a sheath. At the same time, with fury searing a hole through her chest, Ruth picked up Burdick's gun off the floor where she'd dropped it when Louisa had grabbed her.
Hey there. Where are you going with that, Mrs. Rose?
Ruth strode tensely out from behind the desk, hefting Burdick's gun in her hand.
I'm going to see about killing Moon.
I don't think I'd do that if I were you.
She walked on out the front door and crossed the front veranda. She dropped down the steps and angled across the dark main street toward the hotel that was lit up like a Missouri River gambling boat against the velvet desert night. Ruth held the pistol down low against her right side. She mounted the big hotel's broad front gallery steps and walked through the two front doors that had been propped open to the fresh night air and into the saloon brothel's main drinking hall. She stopped just inside the bustling tangle of men, looking around the vast hall that was the size of three of her own saloons together. It was crudely furnished, though it boasted a giant horseshoe-shaped bar curving out from the room's left side, manned by two burly bartenders. Girls in black or wine-red corsets and with matching feathers in their hair ran drink trays to the men sitting or standing about the room. There were all types here. Outlaws from both sides of the border. Freighters, mule skinners, bullwhackers, drovers and shotgun chaps, and several bearded men who appeared to be prospectors. Moon was resting, however. Ruth picked him out of the crowd, sitting about halfway down the long, deep room on a large brocaded couch with his little boots propped on a long, low table before him, a skimpily dressed whore to each side of him. Ruth pushed through the crowd, heading for Moon. He just turned to the girl holding his drink and patted her thigh, and she was lifting the glass in both hands to his lips when Ruth stopped about 4 feet away from the wretched little man. He looked at her over the glass that the whore had lifted to his lips, his brows pinched. His eyes widened. Ruth raised the Colt Conversion 44 in both hands, raking the hammer back with both her thumbs, one atop the other. He raised a pudgy hand as though to shield his face. The bullet crunched through Moon's palm and into his forehead, slamming his head back against the couch. As the whore to each side of him scrambled away from him, Moon's lower jaw slackened. His eyes rolled back in his head and he sort of slumped down on the couch, his paunch swelling behind his shabby vest, his little black boots dropping toward the floor. He slumped still lower, convulsing, his tongue poking out the corner of his mouth, and his head sort of wobbled on his shoulders. Just then, Louisa burst into the saloon, both her Colts in her fists, and elbowed men aside until she could see, about two-thirds of the way down the room, Moon slumped on a long couch and two or three men appearing to be wrestling with someone in red. Louisa knew that the men were taking Ruth to the floor, and just then she saw the gun come up in Ruth's hand around which one of the men's hands was wrapped. Louisa ran forward, leapt onto a table heaped with bottles, glasses, coins, and playing cards, and triggered one of her pistols into the ceiling.
Get away from her, you apes!
She leapt onto the next table toward the rear of the room and kept on leaping tables until smashing the barrel of one of her Colts against the side of one of the men who'd wrestled Ruth to the floor. Still atop a table near the couch on which Moon slumped and before which the three men were crouched over Ruth on the floor, Louisa saw one of Moon's men aim a pistol at her. Louisa shot the man through the dead center of his chest.
Get her! Get her!
Griselda May came running toward her from the dance floor where she'd been dancing with a big buckskin-clad freighter with a beard hanging to nearly the buckle on his cartridge belt. Griselda was moving too quickly and erratically for an accurate shot, but Louisa's slug shattered a bottle well beyond Miss May. Louisa reached down between the men, grabbed Ruth's arms, and jerked her to her feet.
Let's go!
At the same time, several pistols popped around Louisa, shattering bottles and glasses on her left and right. Louisa pushed off a table and triggered a shot at one of Moon's men closing in on her, crouching and shooting. She hit one but missed another one, though a pistol popping somewhere behind her drilled a bullet through the shoulder of the man she'd missed and he fell forward over a chair. Ruth suddenly clutched her arm. At that moment, a thin young man with long red hair and what appeared to be a nasty scar on his face climbed up onto the bar. He wore brush-scarred chaps over blue denims, a calico shirt, and suspenders. He was holding a pistol in one hand, a Winchester in the other.
Now this whole thing has done got way out of hand.
Most of the customers wielding guns had their backs to the red-headed kid atop the bar. The kid stood at a crouch, rifle in one hand, pistol in the other, narrowing one menacing eye as he slowly tracked each gun across the room.
First one to trigger another shot gets one through the brisket.
The kid looked a little ridiculous, gangly as he was. Freckle-faced, big ears showing through the copper red hair hanging straight to his shoulders. He even sounded ridiculous, as his voice had not yet reached the pitch of a full-grown man's. There was something commanding, though, in the easy, assured way he held that carbine and revolver, Louisa absently thought. Something even halfway reassuring, though she was also quite certain that the redhead would die right along with her and Ruth Rose tonight. A man sitting with five others at a table near the redhead squinted at the kid.
Why, I recognize you. You're that kid with the mark of Satan on his face. You got $2,000 on your head, boy.
On the opposite side of the table from the speaker, another man jerked back in his chair and thrust up a gun in his right hand. The kid slid his Winchester toward him. The man dropped his gun and stumbled backward, kicking his chair backward as well until he fell over the chair to the floor.
Anyone else want to buy $2,000 worth of lead?
Smoke wafted around the redhead's battered tan Stetson. Louisa could see now that the scar on his face was shaped like an S under his right eye, angled slightly. It looked very much like a cattle brand. No one said anything. He turned to Louisa, who found herself regarding the kid incredulously.
If you ladies would like to make your way to the front door, I'll make sure none of these fine gentlemen tries to backshoot you.
Are you sure you want a piece of this kid?
No, I reckon I don't. Ma always said I tend to act first and think later. And I guess that's just what I done here, doggone it.
Gotcha.
Louisa wrapped an arm around Ruth's waist, turned her, and began leading her through the tables and the men standing around with her hands in the air toward the front door. Ruth shuddered a little from the pain of her wounded arm, and she held the wounded appendage across her belly, walking at a slight crouch. She looked around warily, as did Louisa, expecting more gunfire to break out at any moment. When the two approached the front doors, Louisa looked at the scar-faced redhead again. He stood as before atop the bar, rifle in one hand, revolver in the other, sliding both guns slowly from left to right and back again. The men in the place were as still as statues. Most of the whores had gone to the floor. A few were looking up warily over the tops of tables. Griselda May held her own pistol straight down by her side as she flared her nostrils at the redhead atop the bar. Her brown eyes were glassy with rage. Louisa continued on out the open front doors, extending her Colt straight out in front of her in case any of the men outside tried to make a play for her. She led Ruth across the gallery and down the steps. When the women were out in the middle of the street, right of the well and nearly in front of the Rose Hotel and Saloon, Louisa glanced back to see the redhead walking backward out of Moon's sprawling place, the Winchester and revolver extended before him. He turned suddenly and leapt down the steps to the street, hurried over to a coyote dun tied to one of the hitch racks fronting the place, and slid his rifle into the boot strapped to the saddle. He mounted up and, keeping his pistol in his hand, backed the horse away from the hotel. Louisa headed down a break between the hotel and another smaller adobe brick building toward where she'd tied her pinto. The kid turned his horse and trotted up behind her as she continued leading Ruth through the dark gap toward the rear of the Roses Hotel.
I gotta warn you, kid with a price on your head. I'm a bounty hunter.
I'll take my chances, Miss Bonaventure.
Louisa looked at him riding up between her and Ruth.
You know my name.
Sure. You're the Vengeance Queen who rides with Lou Prophet, a bounty hunter who done sold his soul to the devil after the war between the states.
Well, I'll be hanged. We're just getting too famous for our own good, me and Lou.
Louisa could hear voices and a general commotion rising from the direction of Moon's saloon. Apprehension raking her, knowing she'd be hunted soon. She led Ruth toward the pinto ground tied behind the woodshed flanking the hotel and helped the woman onto the horse behind the saddle.
Which way you headed?
Louisa looked at the kid again, suspicious, as she climbed up onto the pinto's back.
West.
Well, if you ride south with me a ways, you can branch off a mile or so out of town and I'll keep heading toward the Rio Grande. We'll maybe fool them for a little while.
Yeah, a little while.
Louisa glanced at Ruth, perched behind her.
Hold on tight, Mrs. Rose. We're gonna ride like the devil's hounds are on our heels.
When Ruth had wrapped her arms around Louisa's waist, Louisa batted her heels against the pinto's flanks.
Yeah!
They took off, trotting past the rear of the Rose Hotel and Saloon and up the far side. They turned onto the main street and then continued south along the main trail, heading in the direction of the Rio Grande. They galloped hard along the trail that was a pale ribbon stretching out across the starlit night. But it wasn't long before they heard the thunder of many hooves chewing up the desert behind them.